The enemy is here.
He's here? Where is he?
He'll be searching for the other two boxes, hiding until he has all three, until he's ready.
We have to be ready. You, me, the others.
Joining us now from his fortress of solitude, somewhere in the greater New England area, it's Matt Ellis. He is a PhD candidate in film, a general film nerd. He has a new radio, multimedia show on Repeater Radio, which I'm super excited about. And he's also the guitarist and vocalist of A Hope for Home. Whew, I'm going to take a breath and welcome you, Matt, to the show.
Ian, Nat, man, I am freaking pumped. Thanks for having me.
Well, yeah. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for torturing yourself.
Oh, yeah.
If you can explain first why you're excited to talk about the worst movie of the year.
I did just watch it like in the past 2 days. I did like the first like 2 hours, 10 minutes or so. And then like there was a pretty good intermission point, and then I finished it yesterday. So it's still fresh. You know, I just got tired of seeing the takes and the memes, and I have to partake a little bit, I guess, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. What did you think? Like once the ordeal was over, once you got the epilogue and you got your recommended daily allowance of Jared Leto, like what have you spent the time since? Like, have you been fully Joker-fied, or where are we at?
You know, I timed it like kind of accidentally perfectly where the first night, which was Tuesday. So I was like in pretty good shape and I had notepad out and I like took notes and I watched it and it was all right. I was not surprised is too strong of a term, but I was like, okay, here we go. But then like, okay, that's interesting. You know, oh, look at this. And, you know, we'll get into it. Snyder is actually kind of a interesting visual a seer maybe. But then yesterday I got a little too high and I just remember in the middle of the but here's the thing that I can't quite figure out, because like the first half I was pleasantly surprised, but then the second half I was like, what is happening? But then I was in that moment where it's like, did I just get a little too high, or is it just been this CGI thing for an hour and 45 minutes of nothing?
you opened your mind's eye. That you saw, right. you saw the Matrix disappeared around you.
Yeah, and then the epilogue. Oh my, wow. Okay, night one, I'll give it a B plus, but not the movie, the night,
right? So we got to get some baseline for where you're at with the genre, with the DCEU. Like, are you amenable to the superhero movie as a genre? Are there things that you've enjoyed, or do you generally hate them? Where are you at with all of that?
Yeah. I mean, you know, like any other 30 something white man in America, grew up reading comic books. I feel like when they started, I was kind of like, oh, this is, yeah, okay, great. Oh man, we're going to have, you know, this, oh, I know that this run, this movie's this run from the 70s or whatever. And that was kind of, you know, never like really excited about it. But I would say overall, just the sheer immiseration and exhaustion of the monoculture has really soured my ability to even find anything remotely interesting. Or I mean that's not right, not remotely interesting, but like I can't turn it off, you know? It's like my brain is on, and part of that's probably just the PhD shit that, you know, you can't turn off. But like, there is stuff I can watch and just turn off. But when I watch this, I'm like, well, look at that. And then there's this thing. Oh, look at this. This is so ideological. So that's kind of, I don't know. That's kind of where I'm at. Yeah.
Well, we definitely want to get into the ideology of Snyder a little further down the road once we establish our baseline. What is your level of familiarity with God Emperor Snyder's work, and what makes you fit to judge him?
He's interesting. And at the very least, and this is a thing that I would extend to the film itself too, and get into it, is part of the horror of living through the synergy of our monoculture, where it's just sort of the same financialized IP that just everything, is you almost want something to be bad in an interesting way, or not even bad in an interesting way, just different and interesting in a weird way. And I do think that this is a bit of a tangent, but I do think that, like, I know that the Aquaman solo film, a lot of people read it kind of that way. It's just weird, and James Wan is interesting. No, but Snyder, I think, is really kind of interesting because he gets this. Yeah, he gets that, like, Reddit kind of incel reputation, but, like, he's trained in art history. Like, he's a visual artist. Like, and he knows how images work. And yes, some of it I think is really goofy in the, like, the really slow-mo stuff that, like, really begins in 300 onwards. And then, yeah, you could point out the, like, is that itself just sort of fascism being aestheticized or whatever? But I don't know. Here's what it is. I haven't seen Sucker Punch. I think that's the only one I haven't seen, but I've seen everything else. And I think my take is that he is like the Reddit version of Michael Bay, where I think Michael Bay is also, like, actually legitimately a really interestingly profound artist. Totally just asinine and awful.
Right.
But like, holy shit. There's something going on in Michael Bay's movies that, like, you can learn a lot about our culture and our society in, like, this stage of the world in a Michael Bay film. And Snyder's, like, not anywhere remotely that profound, but it's like the Reddit version of that. So that's my Snyder take.
My lasting impression of those Michael Bay films is the way he renders action. And, you know, he's gotten a reputation justly for his explosions. Mm-hmm. They look fucking sick. Like, yeah, they look so badass. Yeah. And that's the thing that the slog, the 4-hour slog of Zack's Justice League, is just that Nat and I have been talking about this movie literally for hours, and we've watched it multiple times. And so we're looking for things that are redeeming. And every once in a while, Zack will come up with a cool shot, but the majority of it looks like shit. It's, yeah, you know, it's that desaturated, dark, rainy bullshit, and the CGI is rendered poorly, and he's doing, you know, the panning shots all the time, so you never feel like you have a solid perspective or are standing on solid ground. Michael Bay didn't need any of that shit. He just blew shit up, and it looked incredible. And when you bought a ticket to see The Rock, you knew what you were going to get. You left satisfied, and that was like a fulfilling movie and experience in the way that Zack Snyder's Justice League will never be.
Yeah. No, yeah, I would completely agree with that. I can, just off the top of my head, thinking of, and I don't want to call him iconic because that's far too much credit, but, like, images or moments in the earlier films that are corny, but maybe interesting, you mm-hmm. know? Like, you know, notoriously, the Leonard Cohen sex scene in Watchmen, right? Which rolling your eyes, and he can't stop using that song. But
maybe,
like,
we've talked about his use of that song at great length, and there's nothing that should stop us from doing it again. I'm having a new hypothesis. Does anyone know if he bought the rights to that song?
Oh,
yeah. If he owns the publishing, then this all explains everything.
Yeah, did he
do like a Michael Jackson thing?
Exactly, right. He came in, and so, like, because he's probably got the money. He's like, I like this song so much, maybe I want to own it. And, like, he's paying himself off its use in movies. That's what I'm going to throw out
right
there.
He's getting Warner's to write him a check, like, to his subsidiary corporation.
Yeah, the check goes to, like, the estate of Leonard Cohen, care of Zack Snyder.
So, yeah, are there other iconic moments that you can think? I mean, a lot of 300, mm-hmm. which, you know, sort of establish so much of what we're looking at in the rest of his films. A lot of that stuff does look kind of amazing. If you strip away the ideology of mm-hmm. it just looks fucking cool. It's like buff dudes fighting, and it's cool, and the action is rendered well. But ever since he's entered the DCEU, like, we seem to have lost all of that. Now, when we get those fights, when we get a gay icon Zeus, you know, with his 8-pack and stuff, he's not fighting in a desaturated desert. He's fighting on the Windows 95 start screen, but, like, with the lights turned off. It just looks like absolute shit.
Yeah. And I mean, so much of that, too, I think, is just the, like, the way these movies are all made by committee, but then they'll sell you on the authorial vision, you know, like in Marvel's, of course, also guilty. I mean, everything's guilty of, aside from why he drops out of the original version of it. Like, even if he didn't, as far as just the minimal amount of like Wikipedia level research I've done has sort of even said the same thing. Even before he left, he was like, what the fuck? I'm trying to like do this and you're not going to let me, you know, I'm the EP on this project. I'm the one that's supposed to glue everything together and you're overriding what I'm doing. So yeah, I mean, I think that's probably part of it. It's like Watchmen 300 is kind of, I think, the last of it when I think of him as a really interesting, like, and maybe it's because, I mean, I don't know. They're both comic books. They're both comic adaptations of comics that are like, yes, popular as like cultural like icons, Watchmen and 300, but also like for visual content. Like they both really influence like the sort of visual like language of comics. And he, I think, interestingly, like in those does, I mean, maybe this is where I'm going with it, with the interesting things. Like there's a version of it where he just adapts that sort of, maybe to 300 to an extent, but there's a version of it where he adapts that aesthetic to the screen and then like makes it move and like, oh, look, you can do it. But he clearly is smart enough to understand you can't do that. You have to do something slightly different, right? And he does that in 300 and Watchmen. But you're right, like all of the DC stuff is just utterly vacant and empty of anything like an interesting vision that, I mean, Marvel doesn't have one either, but desaturating and like, you know, having slow motion and like some piano cover of insert whatever 80s hit here is not an aesthetic. That's
right. Yeah, I mean, what's interesting with 300 is I feel whether memed or not, some of those images have kind of become permanent, right? They've been inserted into our vast shared visual lexicon. And you know, the kicking into the hole scene.
Yeah,
right.
This is
madness. No, this is Sparta. Boot, right? That's, you know, that's totally there. Everyone will know what you're talking about. And for Watchmen, I think too, it was visually striking. And maybe it's because I had read the comic, but I always remember thinking, even with Watchmen, I was like, this is visually darker than Watchmen ever was.
Totally. Yeah,
right? Like it's setting, yes, he really ramped up. I've talked about this before. I feel like he didn't tap into the Cold War hysteria so much, but he tapped into like a politics of cynicism, which you like, I think you see that in a lot of like Verhoeven films, like RoboCop, I think is a good example of, yeah, you can say like, oh, okay, Verhoeven's really making a point against the militarization of police and the privatization of everything. At the same time, you're like, he also just thinks everyone sucks. He thinks everyone's an idiot. And that's kind of what it's about. I think Snyder really gloms onto that latter part of it. He's like, I'm going to forego making any real political point, but I want to let you know that everyone's dumb but me. And yeah, anyway, for Watchmen, I think it is darker in both regards. I think he really, like I said, bypasses the Cold War politics, just dives into the cynicism. And also he's like, let's make this way darker. Let's make the whole thing, you know, take place at night, even the parts in the middle of the day.
Yeah, the Verhoeven thing I think is really interesting. And what I was thinking of when you said that is like, no, I think you're right in the way that you read, you know, the big hits, you know, RoboCop or Starship Troopers is like, there are two sort of ideal spectator modes of watching it. And one is just, this is a really bad, corny, dumb movie, and it's a dumb action movie. And you can turn your brain off and it's fun. And then there's like, no, you don't understand. He's this like European auteurist about, you know, pastiche in this weird mode. Mm-hmm. And it's a very complicated, you know, critique of fascism and da-da-da-da-da. It requires these two sort of standpoints. Snyder does not.
Right. There is
no way you could do that to Snyder. But yet the aesthetic is the same. It's like the same kind of like, look at the shit, but it's very important shit.
Right. Well, I think that's what makes him the Reddit version is that he's just about the, you know, the epic cynicism guy as opposed to any of the actual political content.
Well, and I think too, in terms, you bring up a good point in terms of the Reddit thing. You know, Verhoeven was never the one kind of wafting his farts to you, right? He's making Yeah, he was the one that would say, yeah, Starship Troopers, it's actually, if you think that the, you know, the Space Marines are cool, guess what? You're probably a fascist, right? That's like kind of as far as he goes. He also has Jake Busey just running naked throughout the movie, screaming at the top of his lungs, right? He's not taking himself or what he's doing ultra seriously. Same thing with RoboCop, right? There is a shootout in a cocaine warehouse with just vials of cocaine exploding left and right. A guy gets shot directly in the dick. But people have spilt a lot of ink over, did Verhoeven have a crystal ball into the future and all this stuff? Whereas it's flipped. I don't think anyone authentically is doing that with Snyder. My suspicion is there's a lot of payola around that in terms of these fawning articles written for him. But he takes himself that seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think you're absolutely right.
So let's get into this a little bit, Matt, in terms of the first half. You claim to have enjoyed it, and I want to interrogate that a little bit. I'm not saying you didn't. I'm just skeptical. What kinds of things did you find to appreciate or like hang your head on or follow as you watched the first three parts of the film?
So I think the two big things I had in mind the whole time were, and I don't write about Marvel like in my diss, but like I do have a chapter I'm writing on sort of like sequels and franchises in my argument about like, my argument is sort of trying to think through them alongside similar changes in like political economy and like the move to debt and the move to, you know, after, you know, we go off the gold standard and fiat currency and, you know, free floating exchange rates and like the interesting way you can, I think, map narrative, not just narrative strategies, but also like the way that franchising becomes very important for a exact similar structure is like debt works, right? Like just keep going back again and again and monetizing stuff in the past and financializing the past, right? And Marvel is such a perfect example of this. So going into it the whole time, I was just like, all right, I vaguely know kind of the backstory of the DCEU or whatever. And I vaguely know the like, you know, Joss Whedon, who I'd utterly detest, like came in and fucked this up or whatever. Although I want to get into it because there's something interesting about this. Anyway, so I was like, okay, all right, not wow me, but like, how are you going to make this intelligible in any way, shape, or form where Marvel has this like really planned out, complicated to the T, like every kink is like ironed out. And everyone knows that the DCEU is like just basically scotch taped together. And it's not that it was like easy to follow or like good narrative or good storytelling, but I was at least kind of interested in like, oh, okay, they're, you know, they're doing the Seven Samurai thing and getting the band together. And okay, oh, that's interesting, I guess. And you know, I think the 4-3 thing is a bit silly, but like, it's cool to look at when you're so used to seeing, you know, I'll say this. I would rather look at kind of an unthought out kind of corny 4-3 than I would somebody doing like super wide scope who for no reason at all whatsoever, because like that always signifies like cinema, you know. Those are, I think, the two things I was like, okay, I guess I'm seeing where this is going narratively and kind of interesting. I know these characters. And then like, some of the stuff was kind of interesting to look at in a like one step beyond banal level.
So my kind of question is two part. One, how much did you want to purchase a Mercedes after watching the first half versus the second half? And then, yeah, mine is like less kind of an interrogation around what was what you enjoyed, but you said like, your reality being altered aside, that you enjoyed the first half more than the second half. And for me, I've watched it in chunks. I've watched it straight through. I have a hard time distinguishing the parts from each other. For me, it's really kind of like one thing and then the epilogue. And you had mentioned before that you took an intermission I don't know if you know this, but there's an intermission for the one in theaters.
Oh, okay.
There is a 10-minute intermission. I think it's just probably between parts 3 and 4. But was there something like narratively different between the first, second parts for you, or visually different? Because for me, there wasn't. But at this point, I think I'm also at total justice fatigue.
It's starting to blur together. Yeah. Yeah, I think there was. And I stopped the first night after they got together and basically decided to bring the mother box to bring Superman back.
Take
but they hadn't done it yet.
Say mother box, take a drink. That's
them's the rules. No, but so I stopped like when they basically got together and like had the plan, and then picked up the next day, and it's then when they do it and like it all goes haywire or whatever. And I think maybe, and again, I don't want to credit it, but like I at least was able to be like, okay, I understand what the problem is, and I understand what they're going to try to do about it. And I see now how they're all like getting together and in their various, you know, whether whoever like doesn't want to join whatever personal things they have to overcome to decide to sacrifice themselves for everyone else. Okay, great. They did it. And then on night two, once they start bringing Superman back, it was just like, why is he mad? why they're just fighting. It's like 40 minutes and they're fighting. But we need another instigating event. I don't know what's happening. And yeah, so I don't know.
Sometimes when you wake somebody up from a nap, they're just cranky.
I once punched a friend directly in the face because I was sleeping on a couch and he woke me up, and I just like a fighting nun, just boing, like. And so I guess that was the Superman equivalent.
You were like, I've been there. I get it.
Yeah. the one thing, as I'm thinking about it, is, you know, not to contradict myself, but I said I didn't really notice anything, you know, narratively different or visually that different. I did feel like the laugh lines or the intended laugh lines really ramp up in, I guess, what we're considering the second half.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's two solid ones when they're exhuming Superman, which I found to be especially funny, right? Because, you know, the Flash is like horny for Wonder Woman and they're knee deep in Superman's grave. And I'm like, this is when you're dropping the levity into this movie. And then kind of throughout, there's like more attempts at humor. I still think I wrote them down. I think there's like 8 laugh lines total. But I feel like 5 of them appear in the latter half of the film.
I actually had a question for you guys about that, because I was sort of thinking the same thing where, and I haven't seen the Joss Whedon version. I've like flipped through it a little bit, and I've seen like scene comparisons on Twitter, like the incredible one of Lois and Clark's mom in the Snyder, like say what you will, in the Snyder one, like this actually like really touching scene. And then in the Whedon one, it's like, she's visiting Lois at work and Lois is like, shut up, lady. I've got to like make my tea, you know? and I know that they rewrote stuff and reshot stuff with Whedon, but I was like, when exactly? And I think you're right. That pick up in the second half and when they were happening, I was really like, this doesn't feel like Zack Snyder. It's not that he's never had humor before, but it felt like these weird Whedon-y moments that would pop in, like, especially with the Flash.
Yes.
And so I don't know if you guys know, could pinpoint like what was what, but like all of which is to say I agree with you, and it felt tonally really weird.
My understanding is that he kept nothing from Whedon.
Oh, really?
That all Whedonisms were excised. That's my understanding. And I think it kind of makes sense, because even like I said, that joke when Flash is like, so Cyborg, you think Wonder Woman goes for younger guys? And he's like, she's 2,000 years old. Everybody's younger, which I'll grant. Like, I thought, I'd be like, that's pretty funny. It's weird that it's happening right now. But I wonder if that's like Snyder's thing, because right, he's an avowed provocateur. He wants to fuck you up. So his joke was like, all right, I'm going to add some of the humor while they're digging up Superman. And that's when, Wonder Woman and Aquaman have their bonding moment, because they realize that their cultures have the same phrase, right? And so it's less that it's just like levity and a joke. It's like, the Cyborg and Flash are friends now. that's what it just happens to be over a joke. But yeah, my understanding, anything Whedon thought to do, and this I'm totally editorializing, but as I've read it and heard, you know, read Zach's words about the Whedon cut, if there was something in it that he was like, oh, that's really good, he was still like, get it out. Like, just out of sheer spite.
Yeah, that is also my understanding. And that the script that they shot, the thing that that ultimately unfolded over 4 hours and 2 minutes, is the Snyder and Terrio story and screenplay solely.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. The funny thing to me is, especially about the Flash job interview scene, which has one of the eight laugh lines, when he's come back from saving the young woman and he's feeding the hot dog to the dog. Like, to me, the laugh line that you would have written there is like, he's doing it like furtively. He's like furtively feeding the dog the hot dog to say, look how much the dogs like me, give me this job walking dogs, rather than, I always have an emergency hot dog on hand to like feed to my four-legged friends. Like, he even fucked that up.
The line is also meat snack.
Meat snack.
Oh, that's right. He always carries a meat snack. And I don't know if that's dog grooming, dog care parlance, but that also just seemed like, I was like, who was this written in a different language and translated via Google before this? Like, meat snack. That's just, it's a weird line.
That's weird.
Meat snack and mother box in meat the same snack movie. And
mother box,
it's,
yeah.
You know.
Matt, you said you had a hot Joss Whedon take that we wanted to circle back to. What was that?
Oh, well, first of all, just that I detest Joss Whedon and anything he has ever touched. But it was a Twitter thread a couple weeks ago. Days, I don't know. COVID times, it's just, you know. And it is. And I went back and watched, you know, flipped through his Justice League. And the image that I saw in this Twitter thread I'm talking about was a similar kind of image that I saw in the when I watched it, and how much the saturated thing is roll your eyes, but holy fuck, does Joss Whedon's movie look awful. Super bright, weird colors, and just like nothing. It'd be one thing if it was shot for coverage to save money, like TV, but it's all done like in a computer, and it's, mm-hmm. it looks so weird. But then as I was looking at it, and then on this Twitter thread, especially, I was like, actually, like, this is interesting because it's so bad. It's so bad and everyone hates it. Like, and that makes it interesting in a way that like Marvel isn't interesting. And it's just irritating because everyone loves Marvel and they're very competent movies and they're quote unquote skillfully done and they look, you know, whatever. And so you're like, okay, this is annoying. But like the catastrophic failure of this movie, part of what makes it fail makes it really interesting. And with like, when I was watching it, I was like, they're toys. They're literally toys. They're literally plastic toys on the screen. But accidentally, like, that's kind of weirdly profound, right? Like, here you go. This is what our culture can produce now. We can't make things like, you know, The Godfather anymore. So do you want to play with your toys? Here are your toys. They're on the big screen now. I'm not crediting Whedon for that, but like, I don't know. I was kind of like, there's something here. There's something like accidentally really profound about this. That Snyder's doesn't just jettisons altogether in the service of like a proficient aesthetic of something, you know? So
Nat, this sounds a lot like your theorem about this being the end of Western civilization. I mean,
my thing is basically, one, I agree with you completely. I, you know, didn't think that when I initially saw the Whedon version, which I saw first, I saw like on a plane, but yeah, I mean, my thing with the Snyder's thing, and I think Whedon's cut, and a lot of the, you know, the Marvel movies, I think, fall into this camp as well, is that we have, I mean, the directors and just we generally have every technological advantage available to us, right? We can make anything. We can tell any story. You can doesn't matter if people are in a room or not, you can tap into the minds of whoever you want. You have all of human history in your back pocket. And what do we get? We get this, right? This is what you get. It's, you know, to me, like I said, it is likened to, all right, how do we solve climate change? Well, let's bring everybody together, the most brilliant minds. And okay, we've agreed on, we're going to like try to maybe pollute a little less over the next 50 years. And that's probably not going to work, but that's the best we can do. That's the most we can come up with. And yeah, it was every time there was just all CGI on the screen, it hit me really hard where mm-hmm. I was like, this is what we're doing with this. This is like the pinnacle of our career. Andrew, like, this is how this looks. These are the stories we tell. Like, oh man, we're in the last days.
Yes, I completely agree. And if I may, I'm reminded here of Francis Fukuyama in The End of History, right? But in a very specific way. And he's pretty important for my work. One is that the overarching, it feels like one of the overarching only possibilities for art or something interesting in our moment feels like accidents, right? Mm. Not that Justice League, the Whedon one, is like good art or anything, but like what makes it interesting is a complete accident, right?
Right.
And I mean that in the same way that I think Fukuyama was actually right about The End of History, but also totally by accident, right? So like, you know, the way that he often gets critiqued is, you know, after Brexit and Trump and shit's popping off and things are crazy, everyone's like, aha, Francis Fukuyama, Soviet Union falls, you thought history was over, joke's on you, pal, you know, things are still going. But when you read especially like the original article before it was the book, like he's like, yeah, it's gonna be really awful and like nobody has any shared stories anymore and there's no point to anything, and you know. And
when I was talking about this being the end of history, I was referencing him and Hegel like specifically. Yeah. And I think of it in both senses, in the kind of like Hegelian sense, which everyone else borrows, but really like, you know, philosophy inquiry has reached its end point. And also, you know, kind of the point that Fukuyama makes, which is more like we've reached upon, or we've landed in like the final system by which we will make sense of things, right? Mm-hmm. That like, this is the system that is going to sort everything out from now on. Right. Some people read that as like, oh, that's a good thing. You know, others certainly don't. But that's how it seems. Like it seems like we've all just kind of slouched into this mm-hmm. and it has, you know, just established its own dominance, and we can't think our way through it. And we certainly can't, in like a positivistic sense, mm-hmm. use it to get out of it.
Right. Yeah. Right? No, that's the key. Yeah. Yeah. And everyone knows.
Yeah. And like you're shackled by it. Yeah. It's, I am making a mountain out of a CGI molehill, but like, these are the reactions I have to these kinds of things. And I am fascinated by the way that, yeah, these type of things, for lack of a better term, I don't know, hold like a mirror up to reality mm-hmm. or whatever. And yeah, that, to me, it was just like the overwhelming reaction I kept having. It was just like, yes, this is it. This is what we're stuck with. The end. So, yep. You know, the end, but it will keep, right? There will be an infinite credit scene.
Yeah, exactly. And then a tease for the next one in which we just do the same thing again.
And yeah, and I would, so you've alluded to the epilogue, which is something that has fascinated me as well, because my first time I watched this movie, I was just like, what is happening? Like, I don't understand what's going on. Also, this epilogue seems to be going on for a really long time. And then it dawned on me, I'm like, okay, this is a vision of he keeps using Batman to show these visions of the future. Oh, he keeps using Batman to show us visions of the future, to show us visions of movies he wants to make. but the studio has already cut him off, right? DC has 86'd him, right? He's got to show up somewhere else with a fake. He's got a guy incognito it somewhere. And so, yeah, I would love, I mean, one, my thought to actually get to a coherent point here. I'm fascinated about the insertion of the epilogue with his artistic vision, right? The 4-3 thing, all of this other stuff. Because to me, it doesn't really seem in service of the story other than Zach has another movie he wants to make. Please go on Twitter and scream it into existence. So very interested on your take of the epilogue in service to the plot and just also, you know, judged on its own, judged in the larger context of the film.
Yeah, I'm totally with you in that same sort of feeling where it's just like, why is this happening? Why is this on my screen? And it also, and I guess, you know, having it spoiled on Twitter a little bit for that same reason, like, oh, there's the Jared Leto Joker scene and blah, 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 blah. Like, oh, okay, well, very clearly he's just throwing ideas out and seeing which one maybe he could get turned into something if that could possibly happen. So that was very sort of apparent. But like, I want to connect it actually to what we were just talking about with like, but go even back to Fukuyama or like other like Mark Fisher, especially this notion, people thinking through not even necessarily the whole like political trajectory of the future, but like the inability to think of the future, the inability to represent the future in art, or the inability to think through an alternative. And isn't the Batman thing with the Joker, that's a dream, right? Wasn't it? Or did I misinterpret?
So no, you're right.
Yeah, it's a dream, but it's supposed to be what will happen in the next movie.
Yeah, a vision.
Oh, I see. Okay, right.
So it's a premonition dream.
But that's kind of interesting in that regard, right? Where it's like, those are the only visions of the future we get, or like this rough drafts of future movies.
This is part of my rant too, where I was like, Zack Snyder, the only thing he can imagine is that stuff gets worse. Right? That's the only, and to me, that's like, I get it. I don't have a hard time imagining things getting worse. Like, it's easy for me to imagine things getting worse. Why would we use our fiction for that? Yeah. Why would we use our vast, you know, CGI storytelling resources to be like, world's going to be bombed out and depleted? Like, I don't need to escape into that. Like, what are you doing? I mean, the movie could take place on a lush pasture, but still, like, the thrust of that next movie is Superman, Lois Lane dies, Superman loses his mind, he kills everyone, blah, 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 blah. But yeah, it really struck me too. Once I realized what I was watching, I was like, also, like, what does it mean that he wants to tease us with how bad things get? Like, I'm not interested in watching personally. I'm not like, oh, you hooked me. It gets way worse. Like, sign me up. Like, it was to me just an interesting hook and kind of window into his psyche and what he feels is like a compelling narrative.
Yeah. And not even that it gets worse in a way that like tries to think through like historical progression or progress or something like that, but just like narratively, well, that's what happens, right? Like, you know, well, that, yeah. And then like the stuff happens in this. By the stuff, it's, you know, the planet's like on fire, and you know why? Oh, I don't know, it just is. Yeah,
it's times like these that we really miss Mark Fisher, you know. Yep. as a, you know, he talks extensively about Children of Men in Capitalist Realism, I think it is, and talks about how the custodians of civilization, they've sort of foregone their responsibilities, and this is why we're here. Whereas the vision of Zack Snyder is just a bleached out, you know, hellscape with nothing left standing. There's nothing interesting or novel about that.
What's also interesting about the epilogue is the teaser for it, right? So one of the trailers for Zack Snyder's Justice League had the line from the Joker, right? Did you see the Joker turns to Batman and he says, "We live in a society," which is, I don't know, like the fan service moment of, because it's like not even I feel like it's more than fan service, because that's just fan service to the internet.
Dude, right? It's just trolling. Mm-hmm. But it's then, epic Reddit moment.
But then he doesn't put it in the movie.
Nope.
And it's interesting to me too, because we've talked about like his lack of humor or these other things. So he was willing to film that. And he even said, like, Jared Leto got him. Jared Leto convinced him to put it in by, I don't know, hitting him with like a comically large mallet. Like, I don't know how that was done. But so they've got that. They tease everyone with it. They use that to lure everyone in. And then they don't put it in the movie. I don't understand the thought process behind that. I don't know if you have any insights. I mean, is that just pure marketing? And am I so bent by this movie that I'm thinking too deeply about it? Is that as simple as it is? Or is like, will Zack Snyder not denigrate his work to put that overt of a wink in?
I don't know. I'm this is totally just thinking out loud, but it almost feels like the same kind of thing that often happens in like internet communities, where you draw attention to like this in joke or this thing. In the act of like drawing attention to that, it not just sends a signal, but it sort of like produces a community in and of itself. But it's not just the act of doing that. It has to be like transgressive for some element. And I think that's the Reddit part of it, right? Is like, it's not just that you all have an inside joke. It's that you all trolled something, and not even like righteous trolling. I love righteous trolling, but like, you know, a kind of transgressive troll a little bit, that like everyone feels like they kind of got away with something. So I don't know, and it would kind of make sense if that's the case. It feels like the act is just putting it in the trailer and putting it online, because they're all going to watch it anyway. But I don't know.
So Matt, does I'm not, obviously we haven't read your dissertation, but does the nature of your work get into, so we've already established that Fukuyama says, you know, this is what it's going to be like from here on out. And, you know, capitalism's not going to save us from capitalism. Capitalism is not the solution to capitalism. Can we tell different stories? How do we move beyond the monoculture? How do we continue to tell interesting stories that are emotionally resonant? How do we push back against the Marvel monoculture? I don't know what I'm asking. Is there anything hopeful at the end of the day? Or is this just all a shit?
It's the question. This might be a stretch too far, but when it happens, and by it, you know, I just mean literally, and this will make sense in a minute, like the better thing than all of this stuff. I think it's going to be incommensurable in a way. Like, and I think this is sort of one of the lessons the left should have learned or has been learning over the past, like, 150, 200 years is, you know, is a question of like, do you theorize the society before the fact and then work to build it? Or do you theorize the system that you're in now, look at the contradictions, think it through, think about what you're then going to do? I'm not sure I could stand in front of either side with someone who's much smarter than me and have a reasonable defense, but I feel much more akin to the look at the society you are in right now and think it through. And if that's the case, I'm a big fan of, and it's kind of, you know, old hat and passe, and especially like the Academy right now, but like of symptomatic reading. I think that's a really, it sucks that there isn't good stuff. But I've almost kind of made peace with it to an extent that like, I'm like, okay, all right, this is awful, but like, what's going on here, and let's use that to try to do something. And maybe this is another element of it, and this might be the, I know you wanted to go up, but I'm going to bring it down again for a minute, is, you know, it kind of honestly feels to an extent like cinema is probably kind of over. And I more and more, when I first started my PhD program, you know, I'm film studies and media, and cinema lives, I know it's digital now. And 7 years later, I'm like, nah, man, it's probably over.
It's toast.
It's toast. But like, in a way, that's kind of freeing. You know, if the dominant medium of the 20th century, the great masterpieces exist. And I think a lot of those great masterpieces really specifically speak to a sort of modernist mid 20th century moment and what the structure of society is like at that particular moment. And cinema as a medium that addresses masses and can be infinitely, you know, repeated. There's no original copy. Like, I mean, that's just a modern phenomenon in a way that, like, we're past that moment. And so I don't know. That's maybe more depressing, but I always end up on the depressing end.
No, I actually really appreciate that. And in a way it is, you know, you've already said it and I'm agreeing that there's something about that that's freeing, that we're no longer bound by the old ways and the old rules. And we can stop paying attention to this shit, really. Like, I mean, yes, we're going to do symptomatic reading. That's essentially what this podcast is doing, right? I mean, that's it. Mm-hmm. Why else would we be doing this? It's not because we enjoyed the movie or because it was good. We're doing it precisely because it is. I mean, you touched on this earlier, that it's so interesting because it fails on so many levels. I think you may have been talking about the Whedon version at that point, but same thing holds true for the Zack Snyder version.
Absolutely.
Slightly different vision, same ultimate effect. Yeah, we can move on from here and get started on whatever is next.
What you said, that, you know, it's cinema as we know it won't always have to exist, that's fine, right? And I think, as we're talking about, with it seems like we have hit the part where the record just skips in terms of culture, right? That it's just,
we're in the run out groove now, baby.
Yeah, it's just, yeah. Like reboot, yep. Reboot. I obsess wildly about the kind of zombification of media, especially, you know, as it just targets a group that now has disposable income or is supposed to have disposable income. And I'm, you know, fascinated in what it means with generational downward mobility. And then who will you market anything to at all? Like, what does it mean to try to drag nostalgia out onto the big screen when folks actually are not a target demo anymore? And so, I don't know, this is all to say that, yeah, change is scary. But a change away from this kind of, you know, bland, just, you know, photocopy of a photocopy of a photocopy, I think I'm all for it, right? Totally welcome it. And yeah, nothing has to live forever if its merits don't support it.
And at some point, these movies are going to start losing money. Catastrophically.
Well, that's what's so fascinating.
It has to happen.
That's what's so fascinating about the DC movies is that that's how they started.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they didn't. And two, we talk about this in another episode, but Snyder had some success. He had some success with the Dawn of the Dead movie. I think 300 did very well. Mm-hmm. Sucker Punch did not do well.
Did not recoup.
Box office bomb, critical bomb. Watchmen was kind of the beginning of what we have now, where, you know, it doesn't do well, but he then comes out and says, well, they didn't let me get to make my movie. And so buy it on DVD, buy a second version of it, right? And I talked about this earlier, and I'm kind of fascinated with that as a marketing tactic, mm-hmm. where, like, does it make sense? I mean, I said this as a joke earlier, but I'm also legitimately interested in it as a concept. Does it make sense? And can you continue to create this kind of cultural event enough to get the people to download it, whatever it is, if you release a version that nobody likes and then tell them, oh, but we're going to kind of crowdsource your, right? We're going to workshop it via Twitter. And then see the version, see if your name's in the credits, right? See if he says we live in a society. See if Big Chungus is actually Darkseid, right? Like, and that, I'd be interested to see if DC takes that track. Because as you mentioned, Marvel is this, like, finely tuned Rube mm-hmm. Goldberg machine, where even if Ant-Man doesn't make a ton of money, they're like, just flick the other domino. We've got money coming with Captain Marvel, and boop, we're back on track, flips the man into the pan. I think DC is just like, how do we just scare people? How do we trick people into giving money to us? But anyway,
I mean, the last thing I'll say on that note is I think it is very like, it's indicative of also like, I mean, this is what a lot of people say the turn to debt in the 70s is like, there's nowhere left to go to be productive. We don't make anything anymore. Mm-hmm. Finance, let's pretend shit, right? Let's make money, I guess. There's nowhere left to go. And this thing you're describing of like, you know, the director's cut of this thing and this thing and that thing. And I was just on Twitter the other day, saw some variety style magazine was like, oh, we got word that there is a 10-hour cut of Kong, Godzilla versus Kong, and maybe the fans will do it. Which is like, no, that's just an assembly cut. That's just like all the footage. That's not a director's cut. But it's so clearly like, well, fuck, we don't know what else to do. Let's try that. And like,
hey, I like that movie so much that if you color corrected and did the, you know, the necessary post on that, I would watch 10 hours of that. No question. I love that fucking movie.
Just DOS Kong. Just like,
hell yes.
A 5 VHS version of, yeah, it is interesting to me. And I'm maybe dragging into another thought that doesn't really land. But I was listening to these folks talk the other day about the success of TikTok and comparing it to the failure of Quibi and how, mm-hmm. you know, what two of the like starkest differences between the two is one was, all right, this is the pro thing. Quibi was the TV shows, you got the stars and the writers and yada, yada, yada. And TikTok is just like your cousin, right? Making a funny voice and talking with a sock puppet. And it's just completely, you know, everyone gets their shot at it. And like, you know, people just kind of choose, and the most democratic version we have right now of like voting with their thumb emojis. And I wonder if that's what like DC is trying the best they can to do of mm-hmm. like, all right, we're not going to just allow a bunch of Zoomers to come make this movie necessarily, but is this can we kind of crowdsource the final cut? And then use that, like we've already got everyone bought in, and use that to at least get eyeballs on the screen.
That is really interesting. Yeah, like an obverse side of Marvel's, like, you know, by committee, just incredibly, you know, yeah. No, that's interesting. I got to ruminate on that. Yeah.
When you talked about, you know, will people band together to release the Kong cut? You're like, that's just the raw footage. It's right. Yeah. Like we. Do we really need just the footage of Marlon Brando like laying on his side from Apocalypse Now? Is that a better version of just him arguing right with the directors? Yeah. Like, do we need to see everything because we have the ability to do so? It's now I want to see the 10-hour version of Kong versus Godzilla. Hope it happens.
We do need to cleanse our palates, though, because we've talked about the worst movie of the year for the past hour. Give us a good entertainment product, Matt, with which we can clean our palates. I can go first if you want.
Go ahead. Yeah, I need to think for just a second.
Saw it earlier in quarantine, maybe definitely in like top 3 or 5 films of 2020, Possessor, which is Brandon Cronenberg's like body horror thing. About the woman who can, with the assistance of some high-tech rig, can take over other people's bodies. Absolutely phenomenal. Obviously, Brandon Cronenberg, the son of, what's his face, Cronenberg? who's the original Cronenberg? David?
David.
yeah, my brain is toast.
Cronenberg Sr. is what he goes by now.
They're the old man. You know, it's got those body horror elements. It also like evokes some of the same just sort of ambient creepiness that you get from like your Beyond the Black Rainbows,
yeah,
and things like that. So, knocked it out of the park level success for me. Cannot recommend Possessor enough for folks who have not seen it.
I've been meaning to, so.
It's brilliant. I loved it. I hope you do too.
It's come highly recommended to me by a lot of people who have never steered me wrong. I still need to seek it out.
Matt, you got a palate cleanser for us?
Yeah. I recently watched Shiva Baby.
Ooh.
Which was pretty good, I have to say. Nothing to, like, you know, write home about, but it's a taut 77 minutes, which is really excellent. The Twitter campaign for it was uncut gems for hot Jewish sluts.
I am fucking in. I have never been more on board. I'm ready to green light this baby. Let's go.
Yeah, it's Adeshiva, and I almost don't want to spoil like what the situation is, because it unfolds in such a cringe but really intense way. Basically, it all goes wrong over the course of you know, the 77 minutes, and it unfolds in the most painfully stressful but like pretty funny way. I was pleasantly surprised. I recommend it. 3 bags of popcorn.
I'm so glad you recommended that personally, because it's the kind of thing that just, I know very little about it, just sort of like whatever's been ambiently around, and it just was really off-putting, and I never would have, it's not the kind of thing that I would have ever followed up on if I didn't get a personal recommendation. So I will now absolutely check it out. Nat, do you have something for us?
You know that I don't, but...
Can you come up with something quickly?
I will say, and this was actually used as a palate cleanser after one of the many nights watching Justice League, I returned to an old favorite of mine, which, yeah, I'm realizing maybe some folks have never seen, which is Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh,
I watched Raiders, which is, I could go on at length about like how formative that movie was to me, watching it at far too young in age. But you know, one, that movie is top 10 for me very easily. First half of the top 10. But what I'll say, especially after watching Justice League and, you know, something being so CGI heavy, just watching a plane blow up, watching a fucking plane, watching miniatures,
practical fucking effects,
watching miniatures explode, watching someone throw a miniature car in front of just like a background with a Wilhelm scream. It was a bomb for my soul. And so,
yes.
What I would say, if you haven't ever watched it, do yourself a favor and watch it. I actually had the chance to see it on the big screen a number of years ago, played from Reel, and it was basically a religious experience for me. And if you haven't seen it in a while, watch it. It's really fantastic. And hopefully soon I will dig out of the pile of nonsense that I'm under and watch a movie that's come out within the last 5 years.
All right. For anybody who watches it, like Act Two, when they're being pursued by the German troop transport in the desert, wherever they are, Tunisia, and a troop transport overturns. And the way that they did the effect was they had a charge, they had an explosive charge that forced a section of a telephone pole out the bottom of the truck that pinioned the whole truck over, you know, makes it flip on its side. You can see the full fucking telephone pole coming out of the bottom of the truck once it's flipped over. God bless practical effects. They're shitty and beautiful. And I hope nobody ever CGIs anything ever again.
Oh, it's so, yeah, just like the...
It's just so innocent and beautiful.
The shootout in the bar, like, you know, it's... shoots that guy in the forehead at one point, and it's just like the most watery blood you've ever seen, and it looks amazing. It looks so good, like
real fucking squibs, baby.
You know, and it's just, yeah, it's fantastic. Watch Raiders of the Lost Ark, and yeah, so just so many. I realize that saying it's not the years, it's the mileage, is directly taken from that movie when Harrison Ford's being bandaged up on the pirate ship. Yeah. Watch it. It's on
phenomenal.
On streaming shit. I'll write to us. I will mail you my DVD if you mail it back to me. All right. I've got DVD and Blu-ray, your choice.
Awesome. And with that, we will wrap it up. Matt, thank you so much for joining us. This is a fascinating conversation. Best of luck on the dissertation. Where can we find your radio show and other stuff? Twitter, anything else you want to plug?
Thanks, guys. This was a blast. It was a lot of fun. I'm on Twitter at Matthias Ellis. The Repeater Radio series, I'm It's on Repeater's website. I'll send you a link to.
Please do. Yes.
Yeah.
Awesome.
This was great.
Hang in there, Matt. Get some vaccines, and we'll see you out in the pit.
I love it. Hell yeah. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.